Welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Monday, March 24th, 2025. I am Carl James, joined by Zach Horwitz and Cassidy Palmer. It was a mixed week for Indiana baseball. They extended their win streak to 6 games with a midweek win at home over Evansville and taking the opener of the weekend series at now number 24 UCLA. The Hoosiers were unable to win the series, however, losing Saturday and Sunday in late innings. UCLA's deep and accurate pitching had Indiana hitters mostly making weak contact. In no game on the weekend did Indiana amass 10 hits. Hoosier pitching, however, continues to improve, holding UCLA to just 1 run on Friday, and then keeping the rest of the games close. Chris is out this week, but he has given me his red belt picks. So to start off with will be the Joey Donato Award for pitching, which will go to this week's Friday starter, Ryan Kraft, who did a phenomenal job just getting this game and this series off. Essentially, it was Ryan Kraft and Cole Gilley who split up that game. But Kraft, against a very heavy left-handed lineup, pitched for 4.1 innings and really kind of just set the tone for the pitching staff the whole weekend. It's to see Ryan Kraft now, and I think Chris mentioned it, it's like seeing Ryan Kraft from his freshman year,
yeah.
Or sorry, sophomore year, all Big Ten type pitcher.
And the one that we heard so much about in the summer.
Yeah, because there was a lot of questions about it, because I'm just like, yeah, it's the Northwoods League, it's not the Elite League. But a lot of these old hitters are out hitting, and it's just, I can't believe he'd put up numbers like that against any college hitting, yeah. Based on what we had seen. But it looks like he's got that confidence back. The fastball the fastball looks real. The fastball looks real. It's cross-firing. He seems to be throwing it to both sides. He's able to throw different off-speed to righties and lefties to get weak contact. It was really nice to see. So that goes, the Joey Donato Award goes to Ryan Kraft. The Alex Dickerson for hitting and Tony Butler for fielding are going to go to the same player this week, and that will be Tyler Cerny. Chris chose Tyler for, I think, a couple reasons on both of them, because Tyler got a hit in each game of the past week, which is a huge improvement. Tyler's really coming along with the bat. We're starting to see the Tyler Cerny at the plate that we remember. And on the field, Tyler had made multiple plays, but the one that really sticks out is the one that at least I got to see in person, which was at the Evansville game when Tyler, I'm not sure where exactly he was positioned before this, but he basically ended in the middle of right field, running out towards the field. The ball went over his head and he caught it over his head.
Yes.
Tomorrow starts a 9-game homestand. So there will be plenty of action at Bart Kauffman Field, which I also like, because that means Zach's going to be handling a lot of the writing load. Give me a little bit of a break. I can take some pictures now. But starting tomorrow will be the Knights of Bellarmine. Cass, what do we know about the Knights?
Yeah, thank you, Carl. So hosting the Knights, as he said, tomorrow, Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern time. There could potentially be a little bit of weather, but it's probably not going to be enough to really affect the game. If you're showing up, you might want to dress for a little bit of rain, but I don't think it'll be enough to worry about getting the game in. And so the Bellarmine Knights are currently number 252 in the RPI. They are 6-17 overall on the season. They are 3-2 in midweeks. It's about the only area where They have a positive record, a winning record. On the pitching side, again, kind of like a lot of the midweeks, I'm not going to guess starter. They're probably going to use 4 to 6 pitchers, maybe more, maybe less, probably not less, but they've used as many as 8 in the midweek so far this season. The staff has a 10.65 ERA, so hopefully, no matter who the Knights throw out there, the Hoosiers should be able to hit them pretty well. They also have a 2.37 whip, so they are letting guys on base at a pretty solid clip, also evidenced by the 352 batting average against. They've also given up 37 home runs on the year, which is about 1.5 a game. They also give up about 7 walks a game compared to 5.5 strikeouts. One potential pitcher the Hoosiers might face, it might not be super likely, but it is possible, is former Hoosier Cooper Hellman. He has a 4.76 ERA in 17 innings of work. He has been used in midweeks. In fact, he's tied for the most total appearances on this Knights pitching staff at 10. But he did throw 3 1/3 versus Lipscomb on Saturday. So it's a possibility, but I'd say not as much a probability. But it's good to see Cooper doing pretty well for a struggling Bellarmine team. On the offensive side, overall, they have a 275 batting average. They've hit 22 home runs, so about a home run a game. They draw about 5 walks a game, but they also strike out 8 times a game. They're also 28 for 37 on stolen base attempts, so they do run fairly frequently with mixed success. A trio of bats to watch are Eli Watson, a redshirt junior. He's hitting 384. Landon Akers, he's a redshirt freshman, hitting 340. He has 4 of the team's 22 home runs. And Joey Milto, he's a junior, has a 310 batting average, and his OPS is just above 1,000, thanks in large part to having drawn 18 walks with a 485 on base percentage. Not going to go too much more into the numbers there, but again, kind of like last week with Evansville, this is a bit of a must win for the Hoosiers, especially coming off of playing a UCLA team that is possibly the best series they're gonna have. Really have to keep that pedal to the metal and take on the on this midweek and get the win, get it done, move on. We do know that Cole Gilley will be opening, but again, it's going to be probably in that same 4 to 6 pitchers, like Bellarmine is expected to throw. So after this, the Hoosiers will be hosting the other half of the LA area teams, in this case, Southern California. Zach has the preview for us.
Yeah, thank you, Cass. USC may be the most historic college baseball program. They lead the nation with 12 national championships, while no other program has more than 7. But this USC team isn't like those back in the 1960s and the 70s, as they haven't even made the NCAA tournament since 2015. The current group holds a 14-9 overall record with 4 wins and 5 losses in their first 3 series as a member of the Big Ten. They're coming off back-to-back series victories over Nebraska and Michigan. Their other opponent was the Big Ten's preseason favorite in Oregon, who swept them at their home ballpark. Only one common opponent between Indiana and USC, and it happens to be UCLA, where the Bruins took that lone game by a score of 5-1. A little more on the team itself. USC is playing its best baseball as of late. They've won five of their last seven, and they were three outs away from a weekend sweep of Nebraska, but that didn't come into fruition. They allowed two runs in the top of the ninth and couldn't score in the bottom half. On the mound, the Trojans own the lowest walk total and nearly the highest strikeout margin in the conference. They average 10 strikeouts per game on the mound and give away just three free passes. As Carl mentioned before, Indiana did not obtain over 10 hits in any game this previous weekend, so the bats are going to need to get rolling as they likely can't take advantage of walks. USC keeps these numbers low thanks to their weekend duo of Caden Hunter and Caden Aoki. Caden Hunter is a left-handed pitcher. He transferred from Sierra College. He'll look to give the lefty-heavy Hoosier lineup some fits. He'll make his seventh start of the 2025 campaign, and he's reached nearly 100 pitches in every outing, nearing 6 to 7 innings. The only games where Hunter struggled happened to be in outings in which he suffered multiple extra base hits. Indiana's offense, especially the lefties, will have to go gap to gap and hit his fastball to get him to an early exit. The Saturday starter, Caden Aoki, is as great with his command as you'd ever want in a pitcher. In 34 innings pitched this season, all of them starts, he has given up a combined two walks. A real pitch-to-contact guy is a good recipe for USC, facing the home-standing Hoosiers, who lead the league in walks with 148. We'll see if Jeff Mercer's group can put together a successful game plan to counter Aoki on Saturday. And from the bullpen, USC has one real reliable right-handed arm. That is Brody Purcell. He's tossed 14 innings and has not allowed a run in his previous six appearances. He should come out of the bullpen at least one or two times this weekend at the Bart for a 1 to 2 inning stint. On the offensive end, the Trojans have one star to focus on, and that is the versatile Ethan Hedges, swinging the bat at a 379 average. The usual DH has also pitched 8 innings, but at the plate, their three-hole hitter, he's a top 10 bat in the Big Ten for a reason. With a team-leading six home runs on the season, he's also coming off a pretty solid previous 2 weeks, so Indiana's pitching will need to keep him off balance. Two others to focus on is center fielder Braden Dowd, who is their clear do a bit of everything kind of guy. It's their best lefty bat who hits right in front of Hedges. So you can't allow the other 300. He's the only other 300 batting average guy. You can't let him reach base, which could do some damage in an inning right before Hedges gets up to the plate. And the other is Long Beach State transfer Adrian Lopez. He's their first baseman and cleanup bat who also causes chaos on the base paths. But he has a high strikeout rate, so we'll see which different Indiana arms can take advantage of that. That's all for the USC Trojans. They face UC Irvine in the midweek before heading to Bloomington for a weekend set. Friday at 6 p.m. and Saturday at 2 p.m. Those are on Big Ten Plus, with the Sunday matchup being a noon start being broadcasted on Big Ten Network. So now I'll swing it over to Carl, who will update us with the Big Ten standings and our Big Ten pick'em.
All right, thank you, Zach. The Big Ten now has three teams atop the standings. if you go to iubase.com, you will you can, and click on Big Ten standings, you will see the full 17 list. We do actually order them 1 through 17, so we include tiebreakers per the tiebreaker rules, which right now the tiebreakers are all just RPI because most of them are either teams that haven't played each other or a whole mess of teams that are all tied at one spot. So right now, UCLA is on top because they have a 13 RPI in addition to the 7-2 record. They're matched with number 10 Oregon, who is at 7-2, and Iowa, who is at 7-2. Iowa got there as now the second team to have swept the last place team, Ohio State. Ohio State is the only team that has not yet got a win. The you have some other highlights. IU is at 5-4, which when you throw the tiebreakers in, is sixth out of 17. The top 12 all get into the tournament. USC, who is coming to town, as Zach said, they are at 4-5, which is 11th place right now. Again, they're still a third of their games are that sweep at the hands of Oregon. So Although Oregon hasn't swept anybody else yet. So USC is the only team that Oregon in the Big Ten has swept. Rutgers and I think what Minnesota, if I remember right, each got a win against. And those teams are at the in that bottom group. They're at 2-4. Minnesota, Rutgers, Maryland, and Illinois are all at 2-4. Nebraska is still just reeling. They're at 2-7 in the league. The good news. The only good news for them is there's still 21 games left in the league, and if they can figure out how they're going to deal with the how the injuries have plagued them and get the right people into the right spot, it'll be interesting to see if Nebraska can turn things around in the second two-thirds of the league play. You know, in past years when it's just a 24 game season, it would just be that a record like that would just be killer. But we'll have to see. The other teams you don't worry too much about because they've all had bye weeks. So Minnesota, Rutgers, Maryland, and Illinois are all at 2-4. They still have 24 games left to go. That's a lot of baseball left to play. Okay, so for this coming week, we've got UCLA going to Purdue, and Purdue just dropped a home series, so that'll be yeah, we'll all have our predictions here pretty soon. Northwestern's going to Maryland. Penn State at Michigan. Washington is going to go to Piscataway. Washington traveling all the way to Jersey. Oregon's going to Ohio State. Illinois to Michigan State. And Iowa's not going that far. They're traveling to Minnesota. So I guess we'll start with Zach. Zach, what are your picks?
All right, I don't even know where to go here, but I'm going to pick who I think is the better team. I'll go UCLA over Purdue, Maryland at home against Northwestern. This one, I really like Penn State at Michigan. I think I'm going to take the Wolverines there. I'm going to go with this concept that I've been thinking all year, the travel, East Coast to West Coast. So I'm going to take Rutgers at home as Washington has to go all the way across the United States. Oregon, I'll take every week. Michigan State at home against Illinois, and then Iowa at Minnesota.
All right, Cass, what do you have?
Okay, well, I'm going UCLA until there's a reason not to. I'm giving Maryland and Michigan both the home field advantage there. I think those will both be pretty close good series. So I'm giving it to the home team on both of those. I'm gonna pick Washington because I've picked against the traveling cross country traveling team a couple of times, particularly going west to east. That hasn't ended well for me, so I'm gonna reverse that and Washington seems to be figuring stuff out. So going with them over Rutgers. Like UCLA, Oregon, until they prove otherwise, particularly this way. I don't care where, how far that travel is. At the moment, Ohio State's not it. I'm gonna give Michigan State the home field advantage there. I think that one will be another tight series. And I'm gonna give Minnesota, because they've played a bit of a gauntlet of a schedule and have pulled off a few big wins and had a few very close losses to very good teams. And I don't think Iowa's quite as good as their record indicates. So I'm going to give Minnesota the advantage there.
Yeah, I think in many cases I'm right along lines with Cass. Although I
I'm
will
not
be
sure if it's good
honest,
this year.
I will be very clear though that given my record, I kind of offloaded my picks this week. I decided to go with D1's Diamond Sports Rankings to determine my picks because I got to change something. So I'm picking the higher ranked Diamond Sports team in each series, which is UCLA over Purdue. Maryland over Northwestern, Penn State over Michigan, Rutgers over Washington. Now, the thing is, I'm probably going to get messed up on that because I think Rutgers just got a giant boost by winning that one game against Oregon. Because that's kind of how it works. The more recent it is, Oregon's so highly rated, they got like a ton of points by winning that. So that's probably going to mess me up. But I made a decision and I'm going to stick with it because, well, what's it going to cost me anyway? Obviously, I think I didn't actually look at the Diamond Sports rankings of Oregon and Ohio State. I don't think I had to. I think I'm okay. I would have probably picked Oregon against anybody, including UCLA, and I probably would have picked against Ohio State if they were playing anybody. So if they're playing each other, this should be a sweep. I had an idea for a rule difference we might bring in next year,
Ooh.
where you can actually roll the dice and get extra points for picking a sweep,
A sweep.
but that may be next year. I also want to programmatically add that to the apps thing. We'll get to that later. I'm going to go with Michigan State over Illinois, and the numbers agree with you, Cass. Minnesota
Ooh.
is picked over Iowa. Yeah, I think the numbers do very much like the fact that Minnesota has done what they've done against such a tough schedule. I said the RPI absolutely loves Minnesota as well,
Oh, yeah.
not just Diamond Sports ranking, but the RPI loves them as well. So that it's an interesting set of picks. This is the thing about last week. There are eight series now every week. Only one of those series didn't go to a rubber match this weekend. That's how good this league is right now. That's seven of the eight series had a rubber match last week. So it was the two games did not decide any of these series, except for the Ohio State series. So
Yeah.
again, I almost think that Ohio State made that more of makes that more of a cinch than Oregon does. So that was just it's well it's weird because the Big Ten I have generally felt, and maybe this is just the addition of the West Coast schools, I've never felt that pitching dominated the Big Ten in the time I followed it. It's not to say it's not important. It's always been important. But it's always seems to be that it's the team that comes out on top tends to do so with their bats. And right now, pitching is the name of the game. You know, the reason Indiana is in the mix right now is because of how well Indiana's been pitching lately. But the reason UCLA is so good is because of their pitching. And the reason Ohio State that hits okay is can't win a league game is because of their pitching. So, and that may be getting the Big Ten to truly be more of a power conference. In the past, Big Ten has, I think that the fact that the hitting teams tend to emerge has been almost a sign of the Big Ten not quite being a power conference, and now we're starting to see it get there. Number four for the second year in a row, the number four conference. If you go to Warren Nolan, it'll say five, but Oregon State is not a conference. I'm sorry, they're not.
No. No. Are there no other independents in
No, it's the only one
baseball?
listed. I don't know what's. Yeah.
Oh.
Does Washington State not play baseball? Is that what it is?
I don't know. I know Wisconsin doesn't.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, on Warren Nolan, they're the only one listed as an independent, and independents are the number one conference because they only have Oregon State. But
State.
yeah.
Oh.
All right. Well, like I said in the intro, it was a mixed weekend in what has been a mixed season. We've had great weeks. We've had weeks like week one, and we've had this last week, which I mean, we said I know I said it last week. This is a fine result. Win the midweek, go out west and take one. It's just one of those things is when you take the first one, you really, really want to take the
Another.
series. You can't, if it had been you lose the first two and then you pull out a win at the end, you're feeling happy. But in the end, it's the same difference. And to some degree, I think, hey, you go against a team that is a pitching team and you beat them on Friday. I think that says something. And the fact that it wasn't like any of the rest of the games got away from Indiana. They were all close games until fairly late in the games. So what are we thinking at this point in the season? Zach, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think by just looking at the box scores, you can see that despite losing their second Big Ten series of the year, Indiana played lower scoring games and they lost due to offensive production. And just a few weeks ago, it was the other way around. So personally, I have no worry with the offense as they regularly string together some hits, and I think being back home for a 9-game homestand is going to help that. I wanted to bring up that I've been impressed with the pitching side. Now that there's so many jumbled roles and Cole Gilley and Ryan Kraft to me stand out, Gilley has tossed 11 innings without giving up a walk as he comes out of the bullpen in big spots now. He's now starting the midweek, as Cass brought up, for the Bellarmine game. It's just probably 1 to 2 innings, like his bullpen. And then Ryan Kraft, on the other hand, looked like he did in summer ball, 4.1 innings in his last start, and he let up some runs, but zero of them earned. So I think there's not really much of a worry, and I think this coming weekend is a good place to set the benchmark going forward.
Yes.
Yeah, and to me, one of the things that stood out that I kind of wanted to take a closer look at is something we've heard in bits and pieces, but I hadn't really explored a ton, and that's closing out innings. And closing out at bats, plate appearances, however you want to phrase it. I particularly looked at that idea of closing out innings. Once you get to 2 outs, getting that third one. And kind of as we've seen, the Hoosiers are currently 13-11 on the season. In 6 of those 11 losses, the run differential was less than the number of runs given up with 2 outs. That would be the Xavier loss in week one, the UNLV loss, the second UNLV game in week one, the second Stetson game in week three, the Northern Kentucky game in that midweek, the first Penn State game, and the second UCLA game. That includes games against the number 5 RPI and the number 13 RPI, and then a whole bunch in the hundreds. This team could have pretty easily been 1-3 or 2-2 in week one, could have been 4-0 in week three, could have had the series versus Penn State and UCLA, and be 7-2 in the Big Ten, tied with Oregon and Iowa, which would be a game ahead of UCLA because they would have traded those games. Win even half of those 6 games, and this team is 16-8 right now. And possibly, depending on pick which of the 3 games, possibly higher up in the Big Ten standings. And this is one, seeing that distribution, it wasn't just an early problem that's been corrected. We've had a bit of that on the pitching staff. There were problems early. And those have largely corrected as we've moved forward in the season. But this issue still seems to be hanging around at inopportune times. Looking even closer, the batting average against with 2 outs is sitting at .288 so far on the year. That's almost 30 points higher than the overall batting average. We don't want that. We want it to be, you get to two outs, you get that third out, it's done. We don't want to keep giving up these hits. Giving up a free pass in about 15% of plate appearances with two outs. That's slightly higher than the overall free pass walks and HBPs. Closing out those plate appearances. 54% of all of the walks issued by the Hoosier staff have been with full counts, have been with two strikes. And 44% of those HBPs have come with two strikes. If this team can tighten that up just that little bit, this team competes with everybody in the conference. Even with that issue, they competed at UCLA. That's arguably the most difficult of the Big Ten series the Hoosiers will be playing this year. They even with this issue, they compete. Fix this, just tighten it up a little bit, and this team probably competes with anybody in the country. And that's a good sign. I have higher hopes right now than I did a couple weeks ago. Like they, I trust the bats. That there's going to be off nights. That's going to happen. Facing a team like UCLA, there's going to be weekends where the offense is going to struggle a little bit. Those are going to be few and far between. If this pitching staff can consistently do what it did against Ohio State and what it did against UCLA, I have almost no worries.
I think it does though speak to one area, and we've talked about this a bit in some of our in some of our chats. I think we talked about it after we stopped recording the last podcast. Was I've been tracking. I didn't do it for the very last game, but I've been tracking the season statistic progression. So same number of games this year to last year, and it was kind of eye-opening because in like 12 team stats. There's only one stat consistently where the team is worse than last year. And most notably, the stat that they're doing significantly better than last year in is earned run average. WHIP is better, but earned run average is significantly better year over year. The one stat, and I'm including hitting in this too. They're generally hitting. That's getting tight. That UCLA week has made that tighter. But it's still where overall hitting numbers are superior year over year. The one statistic that is not superior year over year is the number of strikeouts the pitching staff is getting. And I think that ties right into what you're talking about, Cass. The one thing that they can't seem to do is order up a strikeout when they need it. Now, I agree, you don't need a strikeout with two outs. You can get a,
You're right.
but you look at that,
Any
you see,
out.
that's one thing. UCLA isn't a great hitting team, but I'll tell you one thing they do really well. Oh my goodness, they foul off two strike pitches.
Oh, yeah.
It's just your the pitching staff's trying to put these guys away, and it may not end in an in it may not end in a hit or a walk or whatever. A few of them did though. I mean
Yeah.
they work walks. They don't necessarily walk a ton, but they get them by working them. I don't know that that their guys have quite the eye. I mean, Indiana's hitters are just the eyes are so good. You cannot throw these guys balls and expect them to go chasing unless you are really, really good, like UCLA Saturday guy. That I find that to be an exception. UCLA struggled at getting our guys to swing and miss, except for I think really that piece of it. But UCLA's hitters is like were just like they could hit anything foul. Foul balls all over the place.
Yeah, that first game they were at more than four pitches per plate appearance that they were seeing, which anytime you're getting over four, that's quite a bit.
But that's the part of though that this said I know you say you're not too concerned. I'm a little concerned with the with the and also the fact that I think the guys on the staff that they expected to be able to be these fireman type roles, a guy you can bring in who can throw gas. They're not commanding well enough to put them into games. And that's there's a couple of these guys I would love to be able to see, either whether it's health issues or command issues. We just haven't seen these guys out there. And maybe it's a couple, one or two of them, it's a health issue and we may see them. But it's almost everyone's pitch to contact type guys. And some of these guys, it's just they you're right, they just can't seem to put the batter away, put the inning away. Again, I'm with you. It's not a major issue, but that is, and part of that's intentional. The team has intentionally gone to, hey, it's like Zach has mentioned multiple times, it's the 6 runs or less. Well, 6 runs or less isn't going to cut it against UCLA because their pitching is just too good. You're even Indiana's offense is going to struggle to score 7 runs against a pitching staff that is that consistently good and deep. I think that's the big difference between UCLA and the rest of the league. Every Big Ten team's got a few of these guys. UCLA's got 9 of them.
And I'd say it, 'cause like I said, I'm not too concerned. It's not a big thing, but it's the difference between having a good team and having a great team. The good teams work around those issues pretty regularly. The great teams don't have to face those issues all that often. Don't they largely close out in it. Are there going to be occasional, like, oh yeah, that spiraled out a little bit. There's going to be occasional ones for everybody at the collegiate level. But by and large, the good teams work around them. The great teams don't have to face them at all.
What we're really seeing, though, is it's been a while since we've had what Coach called the grenade on the mound. The inning that just completely gets away.
I saw in the notes, Devin Taylor is only 4 home runs away from breaking Indiana's program record. So hopefully
Where is
we
it?
can get that in the homestand, but we'll see.
Is it 4 or is it 3? I thought his one on Friday took him down to 3. I
The
thought.
notes here on the Baseball Central on the IU website says 4, but we'll double check that once we
It,
get out of here.
yeah, it's.
And I'm also with you, Zach, in saying that I think the homestand will be good for IU's hitting. They'll have an opportunity to be in the cages, to be prepping, especially for the starting pitchers that are coming to the BART. They just they do better when they have more chances to practice. That really is what it comes down to. And they have more chances to practice when they're not flying to Los Angeles.
And I do want to also throw in before we wrap up, I want to give a shout out to Ben Holler for his radio calls in the early season. We will, I believe, have Austin Render for most, if not all, of the rest of the season, and we are excited to have Austin, but definitely want to give a shout out to Ben for his coverage because he's done great.
Completely echo that, yes. But to have this kind of quality in student media in general, and as we know, because we have Zach, so it's just very awesome to see what the student media program continues to produce and get better as time goes on, and the fact that we get to take advantage of that as well. Having Zach on the podcast and doing recaps. So I think that will do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Cassidy Palmer and Zach Horwitz, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART a lot for the next 2 weeks.